Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Ham Nation is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by Audible.com. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/hamnation. This is Ham Nation, episode number 43, April 10th, 2012. Steve, WB2WIK, talks on all things ham radio. Welcome, everybody. This is Bob Heil, K9EID, and we're here tonight for Ham Nation. It's a program about ham radio. We're here with a couple of really good guests tonight. One of our great co-hosts is Gordon West from Costa Mesa. Gordo, how are you tonight? You okay?
I am fine. In fact, I'm getting ready for the big Titanic special event stations that are going to be on the air. One I'm reading right here, W0S, in your neck of the woods at your new QTH in Branson, Missouri. That's going to be a special event station that will start operation Friday, 100 years ago when Titanic hit the iceberg, and roll all the way through Sunday. So we're hoping all of our Ham Nation viewers and listeners will work some of the many special event stations 100 years after Harold Bride and Jack Phillips sent out that faithful CQD as well as the SOS. Go ahead, Bob.
Yeah, we're about 35 miles or so north of Branson in our new second home. We've been working on this for some time, and we're in it. Just south of a little city called Pleasant Hope, Missouri, a population of 614, but Sarah and I just bumped it up to 616. It's my kind of stuff. It's where I grew up in little towns like this. Marissa was my home, as you many of you know. But Sarah's a third generation to live in Springfield, so we're very familiar with the area. I've been looking for a place like this. And Gordon, I'm working on something here for Ham Nation. I've been videotaping the many, many things we've been doing. And we're talking about bucket trucks to hang messenger lines for antennas. We had a guy come in the other day with a horizontal drill and drilled 3 2-inch conduits for coax under my driveway.
Wow.
Drilled the fountain. And we're going to put this together to help everyone see what it's like to build a ham radio station from the beginning. And this has really been fun the last month or so. And no, we're not leaving Illinois. And no, I'm not retiring. All these rumors hit around my emails are, what are you doing? What are you doing? We have a second place we can go hang out on the weekend. And Gordon, you know this. I've been licensed since 1956. I have never had room enough to put up a 160 meter antenna. Well, I have one now. I have a coaxial dipole about 50 feet or so stretched across the meadow down there. And it works so good. And I'm having so much fun on 160 and on AM with a bunch of my guys and friends. So that's what we're doing in Pleasant Hope, Gordon. So, you should get Susie and grab the truckster, head out old Route 66, and you'll end up here in Springfield, Missouri. And we'll go down to Branson. What do you think? Let's do that, huh?
You know, I think that sounds great, Bob, and we sure look forward to seeing that new QTH. But you know, a garden hose underneath the driveway, and you just let it roll and roll and roll, and finally you'll get through the 50 or 60 feet of horizontal driveway, and then you can run that submersible coax cable where you just bored a hole out with a garden hose. But I think your drill is probably a better way to go.
Oh, but I had tons of rock under this thing. That was the big problem, but no problem. We got that finished. And Gordon, we've been doing a lot of club meetings together, and not at the same time, of course, George and yourself and I. And I wanted to report a couple of those. You've had many of them, and they've been really fun, I'm sure. What was your latest club that you did?
Well, last night I was working with the Dade Amateur Radio Club in Miami, Florida, and they dropped the big news on me that there is going to be a Miami Hamfest this coming year in 2013. It's going to be the first weekend in February. Used to be called the Miami Tropical Hamboree. Now they're just going to call it the Miami Ham Radio Get-Together. But by golly, they're going to try and pull it off. So the Dade group, we did last night, and they were a lot of fun. And tomorrow night, we do an Arizona group. So it's always fun to address these groups via Skype.
Yeah, we worked the other night with the Atlanta group, and then we're going to be on with an Ohio group next, it'd be Thursday in a couple of days. One thing that I note about the clubs, though, it's really tough for a club to promote some of their special events because clubs are they have a lot of problems today getting people to show up at the meetings. And we've got to help them along the way to promote some of their activities. And I just love the idea that we can take Skype, what a great technology, and use it to bring these great programs to them. So if you guys are doing anything with your local clubs, why, let Gordon, George, or myself know, and we'll come over and visit you. Well, no, not physically, but get your Skype out, and we're ready to go. So we've had really good luck. How are all your signals and things that you did at the club score? Was it held up really well?
Yes, each of the clubs have done a great job of providing a good Skype connection. I could hear all of the folks ask the questions in the background. And we just encourage all of the clubs that if you sign Gordo or George or Bob or any of us up real early, like 3 or 4 or 5 months in advance, don't hold back that information. In other words, every single month in your club newsletters and on your club's web showing, be sure and list that we're going to be there. And that way no one gets upset when they find out that we were there, but they weren't. Back to you, Bob.
Yeah, it's really a very important thing. Let's see if George is aboard. George, are you there from Mississippi with us tonight?
I sure am, Bob. It's good to see you tonight, and good to see you too, Gordo. And I know you got a lot of interesting stuff lined up for us, and I'm looking really forward to seeing you next week, Bob, at the NAB show, along with Julian and all our great ham friends.
We're going to have fun. That's next week in Las Vegas. Anybody that can get there, why, come on down. On Wednesday night, we have a very special reception at BSW and Ohio Sound. We do this on Wednesday night. That's kind of the closing night of the NAB convention. But over next door in the Hilton, Ballroom B, come on down. We free food and drinks and all that. But the best part is this year, I think they're up around $18,000 worth of prizes that have been donated. And we're talking about things like large transmitting tubes. Last year was a tower. We're talking about a $5,000 or $6,000 tower somebody won. Kenwood radios, Yaesu radios, ICOM radios. And there's only like 800 to 900 people there, which is quite a bit for a hamboree, so to speak. But, boy, your odds are good. So, George, what do you think? We're going to see some of our buddies win something, don't you think?
I think we probably will, Bob. And that's always a great event. I've been to it a number of times. Always a big crowd in there and lots of good hams. And, of course, the majority of them, I guess, are broadcast engineers. There might be a few technicians and owners and salespeople and such in there, but I think the largest part of them are engineers, so we all speak the same language.
Absolutely. Yeah, that, well, that's the whole thing. The National Association of Broadcasters, and so many of the technicians in the stations around the country are hams. That's what started this whole reception. We thought this would be a great thing to have at the close one night to get all the hams together, because a lot of them there. And boy, we've had so much fun. But then it turned into an international thing, and that is where Ham Nation was born. Last year, Leo brought his whole team, and they're going to be there again. And we live streamed that. So you'll want to keep keep in touch with the TWiT Network. And on Wednesday night, a week from tomorrow, they're going to live stream the reception on TWiT. So you want to catch up with that. And the whole group is there. We're very excited to be with all of the guys and gals from Petaluma. So that'll be fun. And got a bunch of other things going to go on. Let's see, Tuesday afternoon is when Ham Nation will happen. So we'll get that all cooking and be on the air with Leo and several other people. George, you'll be there live. So we're gonna have some fun on Ham Nation, but it's not going to be tomorrow or next week at 6 o'clock, because they closed the room, closed the building down, and we all have to leave. So we'll be on in the afternoon. So we'll check the TWiT schedule for the exact time. So that's the story, and we'll keep you abreast of all of that. So I'm looking forward to seeing everybody there. So just come on down to the Hilton, and we'll see what we can do. I read EHAM. Gordo, you read a lot of EHAM things. In fact, you post a few things on EHAM, don't you?
Well, occasionally someone will take one of my comments and I find it on EHAM. But I always enjoy reading EHAM because it's like a free-for-all. And if somebody has something to say about a product, there's no holding back. And you really learn a lot about different ham radio products as the many operators use them in different ways, maybe different than what the product was designed for. But it's always fun reading, and I always learn a lot on EHAM.
Well, I read it sometimes a couple of times a day. I'll refer to it, and I always get a really, really great thrill out of seeing things that are answered properly. There are some things that aren't answered properly, and one of the guys that keeps floating to the top of the cream is Steve Katz, WB2WIK, and I really admire his writing and his wisdom. And guess what? We have with us tonight Steve, WB2WIK. Steve, it's so nice to have you with us here on Ham Nation. Thanks for taking the time. And we want to just talk about all things ham radio. So greetings to you.
Well, hello, Bob. Thank you very much for the greeting. I was in the middle of a contact here. Actually, I wasn't. Okay. Anyway, it's great to be here on Ham Nation for the first time. I didn't have enough time to prepare a good audio system, which I really should have, but I just found out about that like a few days ago, and it hit me too late. But I did bring my new Heil BNAN1 microphone. So hopefully you can see me. It's got PTT, which is Peel to Talk. So, all right. Anyway, we have some things that we talk about, a little bit of show and tell stuff. And Bob, just let me know when to rip into that stuff. I'll turn it back to you. Your new digs look tremendous. I have to come visit you there sometime.
Well, we are we're ready to hear some of your wisdoms and your help. Basically, that's what you do best is help a lot of people, Steve. And I even have noted you'll get in and correct some people, and you do it in a very nice way if somebody gets on and says the wrong thing or gives the wrong answer. So I thank you very much for doing that. So give us some of the things that's happening in your amateur radio career. Also, you might tell us how you got here and what amateur radio has done for your career, Steve.
That's a really good question. How insightful. And by the way, it was a pleasure meeting you with NAB at your party 2 years ago. Unfortunately, I missed it last year, but we had a great time there 2 years ago. And giving you a hug. Anyway, yeah, I've been a ham my whole life since I was 13 in eighth grade. Started out as an SWL, as most of us older hams probably did. As a matter of fact, I think my first shortwave listenings was with a one of these 5-tube clock radios bedside when I was a kid. And I could hear 160-meter AM stations. When I tuned all the way up to the top end of the band, they were just so strong, they would just flash over into the AM band that I could hear them. And one of them, obviously, was very, very close, running at kilowatt AM. You know, the guy had a Johnson kilowatt desk and stuff like that. And I found out that you could look these people up in something called a call book. So I went to the public library, and I looked him up, found out he lived about a mile from me, which explained why he's so strong. And I rode my bicycle over to his house and kept my fingers crossed that he would be home. And he was, and he gave me a whole tour of his station, and that really got me interested in ham radio, and been doing it ever since then. So there you go. My first love is CW. I work more CW probably than anything else. Always enjoyed it. It's still a lot of fun, and I still use it even in VHF contests and stuff like that, working new grids using that mode that I just can't ever seem to get on sideband, so that's one of my first loves. I do have some stuff here, some little show-and-tell type stuff to try to introduce people, maybe newcomers or maybe even old-timers who have more spare time now than they used to have, to get into a little bit of building. When I first started out, my entire station was homebrew. Over the years, it became less and less of that, but even now, it's probably 50% homebrew, mostly amplifiers, switches, just customized equipment that, you know, just isn't on the market. MFJ has come up with a lot of tremendous station accessories, which makes the need for home brewing these little gadgets not as important today as it used to be 20 or 30 years ago. I used to homebrew everything back then. If I had a need for something, I would just build it. Now it has to be a really compelling need. But I have some stuff here that I can show, so maybe that would be of interest. Back to you, Bob.
Well, let's see what you got. It looks like you got some goodies behind you there, and maybe some of them are vintage stuff that have tubes that glow in the dark or something like that. So let's take a little walk through your show and tell there, Steve.
Okay, great. Well, a lot of people, I'll show you a few things that were built out of a compelling need at the time. One, actually, was co-developed by my friend Peter Putman, KT2B, and myself to make a club project. We had a radio club. I was the president of a club. He was, I think, vice president or technical chairman. I forgot which. But anyway, this goes back a long time ago. It was a club in New Jersey. And we wanted to make some fun projects that we could reproduce, you know, make 20 or 30 or 40 of them, sell them really, really cheaply to the membership, and get everybody building something. So this was the first one of those projects. It's a cheap and easy power meter. It doesn't actually read SWR directly, but it does read forward and reflected power. You can compute SWR based on that. And it's a real simple circuit. This is one of them. It's for VHF. This isn't very effective on HF. But this was a repeater club that we were involved with, and people wanted to be able to measure their power on 2 meters or 220 or 440. And this will do that. It's so simple that it's literally just one circuit board. I put a couple of trim pots here to adjust to calibrate it for both forward and reflective power. And it's got, you know, a 10-watt, 100-watt scaling switch and also a forward and reflective switch. And we were able to sell these complete with the enclosure, the connectors, the meter, the switches, and everything else for $20. $20 each. And it takes about an hour to build. So it was a great club project. And I really encourage clubs to do this kind of thing because it gets people interested in the technology. They learn a little bit more about how things work. And it's also cheap. It can be cheaper to build something than it is to buy it sometimes. This is another thing that was built out of just a kind of a compelling need because there wasn't anything like it on the market at the time. And I wrote this up as an article for 73 Magazine. It was published. If you go on the archives website, and type in WP2WIK, you'll see about 25 or so construction projects that were published over the years. And this is one of them. And this is what I call a universal NiCad, or now lithium ion, battery charger. And what makes it universal is it doesn't have any actual terminals. It just uses either clip leads or these probes, or these easy hook probes, something like that. And it reads charging current, and it reads voltage. And by turning this switch, you can change the, so you can charge any battery from about 1.2 volts up to about 12 volts at any current from about 10 milliamps up to about 250 milliamps. And if you want to just check the status of the charge while you've got a battery connected to it, you just push this one button, and that dumps a great big load across the battery. So that you can see if the voltage doesn't, if you hit that button and the voltage doesn't drop, the battery is bound to be charged. If it drops substantially, the battery is not even close to being charged. So it's just kind of a quick and easy indicator, just a power on off switch and a cord and a fuse holder. And again, this was in 73 magazine. It's a real easy project to build. It's very useful even today because it can charge a wide variety of battery types. And even including the slope panel cabinet and everything, could probably be built for about $25 or $30. Getting the meters from All Electronics in Van Nuys, California, which sells them very inexpensively. So there's another one. I can take a break if you have any comments or questions, Bob. Go ahead.
Well, I loved 73 magazine. It, you get in a lot of a lot of discussions about the first two or three pages in it, but I even enjoyed some of those sometimes. But boy, the articles were great. Gordo, you even contributed a lot to 73 magazine, didn't you, from Costa Mesa?
I did. I enjoyed working with Wayne because he was so opinionated, and you never knew what he was going to come up with next. But my feature was, of course, Maritime Mobile, and Wayne was good enough to put in a lot of the Maritime Mobile HF articles I had. So you're right, 73, definitely reader-written, and a personality with Wayne at the helm.
Yeah, I miss that. I really do. And every once in a while, I'll go back and look at some of the old ones that I have. I wrote some articles of building things back in those days, the 10-meter FM craze. We kind of started that whole thing. And so you're right on with some of that. And I remember reading some of your stuff, Steve. So that's great. And, you know, you're right. The clubs need to do building projects like that, like an SWR bridge. It's simple to do. And it lets people know how some of this stuff works, some of the new guys, and even some of the guys that's been around for a long time. So that's a great project, Steve, as well as the battery charger. What else you got? You got some other goodies there?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Life would be not exciting without goodies. I had, when I first moved to California in 1988, I didn't have a ham shack for my first year because I was in a rented condo trying to get settled. I moved here from New Jersey. Didn't have any family or any real support system here. I did have a girlfriend, but I didn't have any real support system here. I had a couple of ham radio friends, including my very, very good friend, Wayne Overbeck, N6MB, who I've known a long, long time. He helped tremendously. He even helped me get settled. But anyway, I decided to do some mobile operations since I didn't have a ham station at home. And the first thing I thought of, well, let's just run out to Radio Shack and get one of those little 10-meter rigs. So I did. It was called an HTX-100. This was in 1988, and I think they were $149 or something like that. It's a 10-meter only low-powered rig. And you could operate it in either 5 watts or 25 watts. Well, 25 watts wasn't quite enough. I wanted a bit more power than that, so I wanted to build an amplifier that could take 5 watts drive and boost it up to maybe 150 watts or something like that, which yielded this. So this one I never published because it would just be kind of too stupid to publish it. Anybody could do this. Basically, the amplifier is built from a Motorola applications node called EB63, which is, you can download that from the internet for free. It's been on the internet since the beginning of the internet. It's a really old app node, or it's an engineering bulletin for Motorola Semiconductor. And it uses a pair of MRF454s. And this circuit board, you can actually buy complete, not wired, but you can buy the board and you can buy the components from a company called Communications Concepts Incorporated, CCI. They have a website. You can still buy it. That whole kit of the board and the parts is only about, I don't know, $89 or something like that. It's not very expensive. I changed some things. When you buy the kit, it doesn't come with any kind of chassis or housing or connectors or fuse holders or anything like that. And also, it had a carrier-operated relay circuit that I didn't like at all. It wasn't very good. So I built my own separate carrier-operated relay circuit, which is here. I don't know if that's clear enough to be really seen well, but it's on a separate little perf board with just an IC and some transistors and stuff, and that's here. And I just built it onto what would normally be the bottom of a cheap Bud chassis, but I made that the top, bolted the transistors to this heatsink, which came from Radio Shack for about $5 at that time, and you just take this. This is the complete amplifier in this hand. Drop it into the box, and now it's a shielded amplifier, and it's done. And that is a, oh gosh, not even close to a one-day project. That's maybe more like a 2 or 3 hour project, including drilling and punching and everything else. And it does output about 130 watts with 5 watts drive on 10 meters. Now, it doesn't have any low-pass filtering, and if you drive it that hard, the second and third harmonics are illegal. So I always put a Drake low-pass filter right at the output of this, just a plain old Drake low-pass filter that you can get. Lots of people sell stuff like that. And if you use it on 10 meters, that legalizes it up. It knocks the second and third harmonics down 60, 70 dB, and it becomes a real legal amp. But if you want to use it on the lower bands, which it will cover, then you really should have a band switch low-pass filter. And CCI sells kits like that. And, of course, you could homebrew it from scratch from plants in the handbook or other places. And I did build something like that. I built a 6-band band switch low-pass filter that costs maybe $60 or so to build. And it follows this and just keeps it clean and legal. And, you know, you can sleep at night and all that stuff. But that's another real easy project. And that's one that I built just because I wanted a little more oomph in my car on 10 meters. Then we can go to something a little bigger, like this turkey. This is a little bigger project. I'll actually put it here on the bench and do some handheld camera work here if I can. Let's see. Go away. Okay, this. There we go. Okay, I'm trying to get it. There we go. Now you can see it. This is a kilowatt amplifier for 2 meters. It's a pair of 4CX250s and push-pull. Using tune lines, uses a flapper vane tuning system here. As I turn this up and down, this actually tunes the lines by changing the capacitance between them, and then the output loading is here. This, it's link coupled. This is the link, and there's just a tunable capacitor in series with it. I added some silicone rubber exhaust chimneys. I actually bought this material from Alpha, the amplifier company, because I couldn't find it. But they have it, and they were willing to sell it to me in sheets, so I just bought it and cut it with scissors. The front panel, The front panel of the amplifier is this. This does not include the power supply. The power supply is separate, and I didn't feel like humping it all the way over here, so I didn't. It normally sits on the floor and weighs about 80 pounds. But this does have the filament transformer in it, and it does have the blower. The grid tune circuitry and the filament transformer are under the chassis. And it's got a grid and screen metering and a relative RF output meter here. And you can switch the screen between high and low to run more or less power. And you can switch, I've got bias taps here on the bias network. If I want to cut the amplifier off and run Class C for CW or FM, I could do that. Normally for sideband, I'd use it in Class AB1, where it draws absolutely no grid current. And under those conditions, with no grid current at all, it runs about 850 watts output key down on 2 meters. If you drive it on sideband voice peaks with 1 or 2 milliamps of grid current, it'll hit a kilowatt. And again, this was a pretty simple project when you get right down to it. Here's the cover. Cover's a real simple.
Hey, Steve.
Yeah.
Hey, Steve, before you do that, show everybody about the tune lines. Show them how simple this is. People are probably looking at that guy just saying, oh, look at this, a kilowatt on 2 meters. It's got to be this or that. Show them how simple it is. You've got the tubes and the lines. Show them how that went and your how that tunes again. Show them how simple that is.
Well, you're right. You're absolutely right, Bob. It is really, really simple. This circuit was in the ARRL VHF manual, so it's not invented. In fact, I got the idea for this amplifier from Wayne, N6NB, who had one exactly like this in his van. He used to operate mobile with a kilowatt on 2 meters and on 6 meters and on 432 and on a bunch of bands because he's crazy, as a lot of people know. He had an amplifier just like this in his van. And I looked at it and said, I want one of those because it's small and light and it doesn't weigh 140 pounds like a Thunderbolt. And you can tuck it under your arm and carry it around with you and use it mobile. Wayne, of course, had a 5-kilowatt generator in his van also to use amplifiers. But anyway, yeah, this is very, very simple. It's made out of a couple of 3/4-inch copper pipes that you can buy at Home Depot. Well, of course, copper isn't as cheap as it used to be. But when I bought this, you know, all of these parts, except for the tubes, of course, and the tube sockets, but all of these parts were like $20-$30. It was a very, very inexpensive amplifier, just made out of a copper pipe. This is a tuning strap to set the length of the pipe using a brass shorting bar. This flapper tuning mechanism is nothing more than a piece of fiberglass shaft. It's just a piece of fiberglass that I don't even remember where I got it. Probably stole it out of some other piece of equipment. I added a couple of little Teflon spacers down in there to make sure the thing couldn't arc, you know, even if I wanted it to, in case I shorted it out. So I did some of that stuff. The tubes themselves are very readily available. 4CX250s, they've been on the market since the 50s or maybe even the late 40s. Part of the 4X150 family, just like the Thunderbolt used or the KWS1 or many other amplifiers. And they're tetrodes, so they have a tremendous amount of gain. This particular amplifier, when I mentioned the output power, 1 kilowatt PEP on sideband, it achieves that with about 5 watts of drive. So you have to be really careful to not overdrive it. With a typical 25-watt sideband rig, you'd want to add a big fat attenuator between the rig and the input of this thing to keep it from just smoking, because it only takes about 5 watts drive. But Bob, I remember you had a 6-2 Thunderbolt, and that was a similar circuit with similar drive constraints, and I bet you have fond memories of that, Bob. Go ahead.
Absolutely. I built it. I was 20 years old. I built that from a kit. I didn't want to buy just an amplifier and set it on my table because I was into building things. And it was my whole career was learning to do that kind of stuff. And the 6-2 Thunderbolt was just about like that. Their tuned lines, they silver plated them. And other than that, it's the same story, of course. And all of you that are watching tonight and you're looking at this saying, oh, this is too complicated. No, it's not. It really isn't. And I really appreciate you bringing some of these projects on, Steve. And what we need to do is single one of those out some night, have you back, and we'll do schematics and you can show them parts and pieces. That'd be kind of fun. What do you think, Gordon? Wouldn't that be a thing to come?
I think that's a terrific idea. In fact, last night, while I didn't hear Wayne Overbeck on the air, his name came up several times because Wayne is still a very active VHF, UHF microwave operator here in Southern California. He had a cabin up in Tehachapi with tons of gear in it, including a beacon, and a fire about 2 years ago completely wiped out his cabin, his rigs, all of his awards. But, you know, Wayne Overbeck and Steve knows what a guy. He just said, got to carry on, and that's just what he's doing. And he's really leading some efforts in working with the league on determining 900 megahertz band plan. So last night, the 2-meter sprint, yep, I had the KW on myself, but mine's not a homebrew. It's an old Henry 2002, but it too has that flapper valve and the two copper pipes.
It's a simple way to make that tune, and that's really great. Well, Steve, we're going to have to close this part for now, but we want to have you back. We'll stay in touch and be thinking about some of that we could bring this on as a kit. Would you like to do that? Would that be fun?
Oh yeah, no problem at all. I you know, I was the VHF editor of CQ Magazine for 4 years, from 84 to 88, and I had a lot of homebrew stuff in there. During that time, I was doing a lot of writing and doing a lot of construction article writing. I had 3 8877 amps for 6 meters, 2 meters, and 432 that all looked the same and all stacked one on top of each other and shared a common power supply. And I still have all that stuff, but also many more simple projects, small, like little SWR meters and things like that, those kind of projects that would make great, great club projects for you know, newcomers or old-timers alike. If you're a ham and you haven't built anything, you've missed half the fun. I mean, half the fun. A lot of people will put together a dipole and say, hey, I built my antenna. And yeah, that's fun also. But putting something on the bench and drilling holes and soldering wires, I mean, you know, I'm not sure where I'd be without all that. Go ahead.
I, hear you. That's great. Well, we really appreciate you being here tonight with us, and we'll be reading your comments and things on all the different forums. But let's think about that. Get past Dayton and a couple of other large fests, and we'll have you back, and we'll build something. That'll be really good. I have a soldering iron. Gordo's got a soldering iron. And the guy that's really got a soldering iron is down in Mississippi. George will be on a little bit later with that. So we'll get it all going. So thanks so much, Steve. I really appreciate you being here. 7-3 to you, man.
Oh, no problem at all. I had one other thing, if I could take 10 seconds to show. A lot of people I see on the internet talking about, gee, you know, I can't afford a watt meter, or I can't afford a dummy load. I don't have a dummy load. What am I going to do? I just wanted to show one example of a swap meet type dummy load. This one's made by Bird or Coaxial Dynamics or somebody. It's a military surplus thing. This is dead flat up to 1,000 megahertz, and it's got a built-in watt meter. And it'll actually measure 3 watts full scale up to 150 watts full scale. And the dummy load is good for 150 watts continuously. And these, at the TRW swap meet down here in Redondo Beach, and I know you've been to that, Bob, these things are $65, and they work. They're perfect. They're in perfect condition. So, you know, don't sweat. Anybody who says, well, gee, you know, that's a real big expense, and that's a horrible thing. There's a lot of this stuff on the surplus market, and I just wanted to bring one example of that. Bob, go ahead.
Yeah, I appreciate that, because a lot of guys go to Amfest and they think all that's all the things in the parking lot are a lot of junk. No, it's not. It might be old and vintage, but a lot of it is really worth all of the looking around and digging. That's always the fun. Thanks very much for being here, and we'll have you back for sure. Last week, Gordo and I were in Milwaukee, and we had a great time at Superfest, but I want to play just a – we only did a couple of minutes of video. There was so much there, so we're going to do that. But first, Leo is here, and we have a message from Leo. So take her away, W6TWT.
Hello, fellow hams. I know that you're enjoying the show, and we'll be back to it in just a moment. But I wanted to tell you all about Audible.com. I'm really pleased that Audible's decided to advertise on Ham Nation, because I think hams are a natural audience for this. Look, you're smart. You like to learn. You like to listen. Audible.com brings reading back into your life by letting you read books at those times when you normally can't hold a book. When you're driving, when you're walking the dog, when you're at the gym working out. You can listen to books. I get literally an hour or two of reading in every single day that I wouldn't get in thanks to Audible.com. Check it out. We've got a free book for you. If you visit Audible.com right now, Audible.com. Actually, let me give you the special URL for Ham Nation, audiblepodcast.com/hamnation. You can sign up for the gold account. That's the book a month account. But your first book's free. You get a credit for a free book. You can quit at any time. And keep that book forever, so it's yours to keep at no cost. Should you decide to leave, I don't think you're going to. By the way, Audible has old-time radio, theater, and drama. It has lots of great stuff. The Lux Radio Theater, American Radio Works. I know a lot of you have a kind of a fondness for the olden days of radio. You can listen to Audible for that. But also, All the Best Are Husbands Necessary, classic movies on the radio with Burns and Allen. Now that, you can get that for free. Get that for free. Of course, they've got bestsellers, too. The Hunger Games, very hot right now because, of course, the movie just came out. They've got books in business, classics, fiction and nonfiction, history, science and technology. And I suspect a few hams are sci-fi fans. And I got to tell you, this is a great place for sci-fi fans. I've been an Audible member since 2000. I have to admit, when I first joined Audible back in 2000, there weren't a lot of great sci-fi books on here, but they've made a concerted effort with their Audible Frontiers program to record many of the greatest science fiction books that were never on audiobook, like Robert Heinlein's The Moon is a Harsh Mistress. What a great book that is. Tell you what, visit audible.com, pick a book, then go to audiblepodcast.com/hamnation and get your first book free. You're going to love it. And we thank Audible for supporting all the hams and Ham Nation. Now, back to Gordo and Bob and George and the guys. More Ham Nation.
Thanks, Leo. And Audible is really cool. If you haven't looked into that, do that. And I know Leo does a lot of audible things. That's cool. Well, Gordo, we had a great time in Milwaukee. And the only problem is that we had so much going on. It would be a major thing to, we could take the whole hour showing the video. But wasn't that a fun Superfest this year? Where'd he go? Tell you what, let's just start the video. We got a couple of minutes for you. Just a real fast blast through AES's warehouse. Here we go. AES Superfest 2012.
Hey, Gordo, let's go in and see what's happening.
Good morning. How are you?
Hello,
Ham Nation.
All right, from AES Superfest.
Okay, here's information about for those that would like to welcome to my AES Superfest. Come on in and get warm.
Hello, everybody.
Turns out he was in here.
Thanks for coming to my 18th annual show, Gordo.
You've been doing this 18 years?
Well, you've been here about 17 of them. You should know.
Well, the amateur community certainly appreciates all that AES and that you do to make this happen at Superfest.
I'll do it as long as I can.
Nation, this is the man that does the antennas for Tim Allen's set.
Exactly, and actually I have one set up right here that people have been taking a look at.
The only thing that would really fit up above the set is the
90. What a great piece. All right.
Very nice.
It's Randy. You got HRD up and cooking, huh?
See the waterfall. I'm 857.
Of us on Ham Nation, but now we get to see what you really do. Look at all this pretty stuff. Oh man, this is cool.
How are you, Bob?
Okay, Robert, you having a good time?
It's great to be here. Yeah, we're enjoying ourselves at AES.
All right, well, it's nice to see the league here.
Thanks, Bob.
Thank you. It's the prize
booth. Didn't win anything yet.
Okay. Here we are with Cheryl, and we discovered the show note guy. Dan is here.
TWIT.TV and twit.tv. So, I'm sorry. Without further ado, I give you Bob Heil and Gordo Williams.
Thank you, Leo.
That was a little... How about that, Gordo?
Oh, I think that was fun. That was great. Sorry I dropped out there for a moment. I must have sneezed or something. But let me tell you, it was a great get-together at Amateur Electronics Supply. And so neat that many of you in the chat room were there to greet us personally. Bob, we had a ball, did we not?
It was great. And Leo introduced us, and there were a lot of people there, as you saw. The forums were packed, standing room. You couldn't really see the back of the room there. But, man, it was really great, and they had forums all day. Ray Grenier did an incredible job. He does every year, but this one was over the top. So look forward to next year. Why not? Let's do it again. That was super, huh, Gordo?
Yeah, I'm for it. And Ray, certainly, I think, what was this there? I forget how many they've done, but a whole bunch. And all of the industry is always pleased to be there because it's sort of our warm-up before the big one. And the big one, well, we got a couple big ones. Next weekend is Visalia, the big DX convention up in Visalia, California. And then, of course, our big weekend, Bob, is going to be Dayton Hamvention, and that is the middle of May. And that's when we're going to look forward to seeing everybody at Dayton.
Yeah, we're so excited, and we'll have a Ham Nation booth there, and I think Amanda and George, everybody's going to be there. It'll be fun. It'll be fun. And I'll tell you who else is there. Don Wilbanks with his PR40. If you haven't seen this, he needs to show this a little more. He has a great tattoo of his PR40 on his arm. It's quite special. So let's hear from Don in Newsline and see what's going on in the news of ham radio.
From Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 1808, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Tuesday, April 10, 2012. The FCC is taking a look at amateur radio's role in emergency communications. It also wants to know about obstacles to ham radio operations, such as conditions, covenants, and restrictions, better known as CC&Rs, that keep radio amateurs from being able to fulfill their public service duties. It's done this in a public notice given the identifier of GN Docket 12-91, also known as DA 12-523. The commission is required to study amateur radio as part of a public law known as the Middle Class Tax Relief and Job Creation Act of 2012. The FCC is to analyze ham radio's uses and capabilities during emergencies and to submit its findings to House and Senate committees. The law also requires the commission to analyze ham radio's importance as it relates to protecting lives and property. The commission is to provide recommendations on how to enhance voluntary deployment of ham radio operators when needed. The law compels the FCC to evaluate how best to integrate amateur radio into furthering various federal government initiatives that might require communication support. If there are impediments along the way, the law requires the commission find ways to remove them. For example, the law questions whether antenna restrictions or unnecessary private land use restrictions wind up causing more problems than they solve. If there are any current commission rules that serve as impediments to what hams try to accomplish during emergencies, the FCC is told to name them and assess whether they should be changed or lifted to make it easier on hams trying to help during disasters. If you want to submit comments, you have until May 17th to do so. You can file your comments electronically or by mail. To submit comments electronically, go to apps.fcc.gov/ECFS. Paper filings must include an original and one copy for each filing. Those must be mailed to the Commission's Secretary. That address is Office of the Secretary, Federal Communications Commission, 445 12th Street Southwest, Washington, D.C., 20554. In a related story, if you live in a CC&R-restricted community, have deed restrictions or homeowners association covenants that have prevented you from erecting amateur radio antennas, the ARRL wants to hear from you. The league says that it's looking for input in two specific areas. These are recent amateur radio involvement in actual emergency communications and disaster relief and specific details about how CC&Rs and other private land use restrictions have impaired licensed amateurs to participate fully in these disaster relief communications. If your ability to participate in ARRIs, RACIs, Skywarn, CERT, or other emergency and disaster relief communications has been limited because of the inability to have adequate antennas due to such land use or owners association restrictions, you're asked to provide that information to the ARRL. Please provide your documentation to the ARRL as soon as possible, but definitely before Wednesday, April 25th. It can either be uploaded to the ARRL website at www.arrl.org/ccr-study-information, or they can be sent as an email attachment to an email sent to ccrinfo@arrl.org. And don't worry, you'll find all these addresses in the printed edition of this week's Amateur Radio Newsline. Canada's begun issuing experimental licenses for the 60-meter band. Regulator Industry Canada has issued the first such developmental license, April 2nd, to Russ Hemphill, VE3FI, to use the call sign VX9GHD at 5 megahertz. Canadian radio amateurs have been waiting 3 years for the opportunity to join the USA, Britain, and other nations making use of the 60-meter spectrum. When a true Canadian amateur radio allocation on 5 megahertz might be approved is at this time unknown. AMSAT and the ARRL are teaming up during the 2012 Dayton Hamvention to recruit new amateur radio on the International Space Station, or ARIS Mentors. At 4 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, May 18th and 19th, the ARRL stage will be used by AMSAT to explain the need for additional ARIS Mentors. It will also outline the requirements and responsibilities needed to help provide a reliable conversation between astronauts and selected groups or schools. All amateurs attending Hamvention 2012 are invited to attend. And that's all from Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news brought to you each and every week for nearly 35 years at www.arnewsline.org. I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW, coming to you this week from my kitchen, 73. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation.
All right. Thank you. Kitchen. Oh, that's great. He is terrific. Well, we invite all of you to send pictures of your station to us, and we've been covered up in the last few weeks, and we wish that you send more because we're going to use them eventually, so get them to us. But Julian went out and did a video, so let's go look at this wonderful shack that Julian did just last week. So take her away, Julian.
Well, Hi, N6GEB here. Thanks for letting me show you my station. I'm running a TS830S, a Kenwood station monitor, external VF bow, and antenna tuner. This is my primary HF rig. I have a TS2000 Kenwood that I usually use for VHF, UHF, and when I get lazy, it's my HF rig. I have a Kenwood external speaker. Yes, Bob, I will be upgrading. You convinced me. Microphones, an MC50 and an MC90. Both became obsolete when I bought these.
Great quality.
For antennas, I'm running a G5RV at about 40 feet. Works rather well. On my roof, there is a 6-band Cushcraft vertical, which I use for usually my 6-meter antenna, and a J-pole, simple J-pole for my 2-meter. That's my base station. But I have a question, Bob. I'd love to run a boom mic, and more than likely a PR40. I would like to run them at the same, this and these at the same time through a mixer. I would like to be able to choose the radio and the microphone without switching back and forth. Not difficult, but sometimes it's time consuming. So maybe we can address that at a future Hamnation. But thanks for letting me show you my station. And this is November 6th, Golf Echo Bravo, Petaluma, California, 73s.
All right. Well, we've covered that here for 2 or 3 weeks. George and myself, we did showed you how to build a box to do that. So you can do that with a little mixer or with one of Julius, W2IHY. You can switch microphones on that, too. You might want to look into that. That's pretty cool stuff. Well, that was great. Julian, thanks for doing that. And it's nice to see some of the stations. So, you guys, get out your cameras and send us some pictures. We'll be looking forward to that. We're going to have quite a bit next week when we do this show from NAB. We'll be able to pick up some of those pictures. We'll show some more of those. So get them to us, and let's see what we can do. Well, we're going to go to Northern Illinois. And usually Northern Illinois, I'd go over here on 3850 and I can talk to Cheryl. But tonight we're going to get to see and talk to her. And we saw her at Superfest. So how you doing, Cheryl? It's good to have you here tonight. And what's going on in the chat room?
Hi, Bob. How are you? Hi, everybody. Welcome to Ham Nation. Great to have you here tonight. Just wanted to say that was a great piece and a wonderful Radio Shack there that Julian had. Really beautiful, nice work there. Doing just wonderful. I just wanted to chat a little bit about what someone had said about the new kit for a new project, some of the things that are needed. They put this comment in the chat room that you would need 2 tubes, some copper pipe, a toilet flapper, and some chewing gum for the next project. I didn't say it. I just thought it was interesting. So I wanted to relay that. And they wanted to know, Bob, if you were actually using the whole town's internet for tonight's show from your end. That was one.
Obviously, they weren't listening in the beginning. This is a brand new broadband satellite system called Xceed. It's only been on the air a couple of weeks, and it is, as you can see, fabulous. So we're not tied to anybody's internet or anybody's coax. We have, if it was lighter outside that window, you could see it, a little dish about the size of a DirecTV dish. And Xceed, go check out their website. It's pretty cool stuff, and it's not expensive. And so I'm really happy about what's going to happen here with Xceed. It's a part of Viasat, so check it out. So that's the answer on that one, Cheryl.
Well, that settles that then. But moving on, there was a new ham that was going to be getting their technician soon. And he or she said, I was thinking about getting a rock mite once I get my technician license. So what frequency would be best to order it with was their concern. What way should they, what's the best frequency that they should order it with? I'm not sure what a rock mite is, but that was one of the questions. Are you familiar with that?
Nope. Got me. Can't help you on that one.
All right. How about this question then? Is 73 magazine available via archived digital copies? They wanted to know that in the chat room.
Oh, yeah. Gordo, you keep up on the archives with 73?
No. I am part of the archives, but I don't know if it is available on the archives. We're going to have to get a hold of Wayne Green and get a little review as to how we can see some of those back issues. So that'll be part of our mission for next week or week after next, and I'll try and find out about 73 on the archives.
Oh, thanks a lot for the follow-up in the future there, Gordo. Appreciate it. And Bob, last week someone wanted to know that Hunger Games microphone that you were using, is that available at all for sale, that particular microphone you were using on last episode of Ham Nation?
Absolutely. It's our Finn. Yeah, absolutely. It lights up. In fact, it was lit up in this show. That's a cool microphone, and it's got the same element this has in it. So, yeah, it sounds good. Great. Also.
Excellent. Well, I just wanted to invite everybody out to 3850. We'll be firing up the 3500Z tubes, courtesy of N9WQ. I've got an amplifier, full legal limit now, running the FT2000 Yaesu with that. So that's the new rig, and I hope to hear you out there. And that's really all I've got for now at 3850 later on, plus or minus three kilohertz. Thanks.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. And there it is. Only it's not lit up because I didn't have it plugged in.
Well,
let's see what's going on with the old soldering iron in Mississippi. George, what are you doing, and what's on tap tonight?
Well, it sure was good to see Steve earlier, and although I never saw his soldering iron, I think I could smell the smoke. Let me just cover our contest real quick because I know we're about to run long. Our question last week was, what connects the ambervescent lunar Wayne shaft of the turbo intabulator rotor system? And Russell Richard, WP2AHG1, he said the answer is the six hydrocopic Marzul vanes are fitted to the ambervescent lunar Wayne shaft. Five clearly would be too few. Seven would just be silly, after all. And because the fractional hydrocopic, Marzul vanes are purely theoretical and patently impractical, the twist antenna makes sure to use exactly six of them. So thanks, Russell. We'll be sending out this copy of Constructing HF Wire Antennas to you this week. And I thought I would get back to some more technical stuff. You know, I'm going to be burning some more PC boards here in the near future. And I thought tonight would be a good place to start looking at schematic CAD programs. So, Alex, for quick and dirty projects, you'll usually see me draw out the schematic by hand, and I'll also lay out a PC board by hand. However, sometimes you want a project that looks a little better or that maybe you're going to share with someone else. So today, let's take a look at a couple options there. There are a number of CAD programs that you can use for creating schematics and PC boards, and some are even free. Probably the best free one that I've played with is EagleCAD. But today we're going to look at a very simple one that's easy to learn and begin using immediately, and that is ExpressPCB. They also have a schematic program called ExpressSCH, and that's what we're going to look at today. The inspiration for today's project comes from the 1980 edition of Forrest Mims' Engineering Notebook, which was sold at Radio Shack then. He created a frequency divider using a 555 timer. After we launch Express Schematic, the first thing we'll do is come fill out the information at the bottom here. That shows our company name and what the project is. Now that we've got that taken care of, we'll zoom back out where we can see our work area here. Now we'll begin by placing components. So we'll click on Place a Component, and then up here at the top, we choose the component that we're looking for, the LM555. Then we'll put it over in the middle of the schematic here. We can click the arrow over here and grab that part and move it around to exactly where we want it to be. Now, once we've done that, we'll add in a ground connection by choosing ground over here. And then you have to choose the type of ground that you want. And we're just going to choose a power ground. And we'll place it right here on pin 1. Now, how do we know that's pin 1? Well, we can zoom in a little bit and we get a little better picture of what we're looking at here. On pin 2, we'll want to put our input frequency here on the trigger, so we'll need a wire to go out and do that. Click on trigger, stretch to where we want to position the wire. Once we get there, we'll click once, and then we'll right-click to drop the wire there. Let's go choose our next component. We want to put a end to this wire out here, and so we'll do a wire connection. And it put a W here for wire. We need to change that to what we actually want to call this, so we'll double-click on it. And then that brings us up a place to put a part number. We're just going to call that frequency N. We'll also need a wire for a plus 5 to minus 15 volts DCN. That'll come off pin 8 here. So we'll choose a wire, click, drag where we want it, click once we get there. Remember, we'll have to right-click or else it's just going to keep trying to follow us around. So right-click to release that. And now we'll want to place that wire connector here at the end again. And this one, we're going to name plus 5 to 15 VDC. Now, there'll be one more wire that just comes out of the device here, and that'll be on pin 3, which will be our output frequency. So let's draw that wire. Click where we want it to go once, and then right-click. And we'll put a pad on the end of that. Now, this one, we're going to want to go the normal way, so we won't tell it to flip it down. And we'll come over here and name this one Freak Out. Now, there's going to be a wire that goes all the way around from pin 6 up here to pin 7. So we might as well go ahead and get that one in now. We're going to need some grounds out here. There's actually going to need to be 3 grounds. So we'll run a wire for that. Let's position 3 of these wire terminals. Each one has to have a different name. So we'll just name them ground 1, 2, and 3. There's also another wire that comes off the ground that's going to a 0.1 microfarad capacitor, which will be here in series, and then connect here. Now we'll double-click on it, and we'll name this one C1, and we'll give it a value, 0.1 UF for microfarad. Now you notice it put 0.1 microfarad right here in the way. We can just grab that and drag it down here to a more convenient place, as well as the C1. We can move that up out of the way a little bit. Now let's connect a wire to that, and let's draw another wire over here. Now we've got one other component we need to add, and that's going to be a 100K ohm pot. So back to components. We'll name this one R1, and it's going to be 100K. And now we'll draw a wire to connect that. Now the wiper is going to come right up here off our DC input, so we'll click there and click on the wire, and then right-click to release it. Now at this point, we think we've got a completed schematic, but we should go up here to File and click on Check Schematic for Netlist Errors. And we didn't find any here. If we had, though, it would give us a list of them and give us some clues as to what we didn't have right. Now I'll save this file. And we can print out that schematic by just going to File and Print here. And now that gives us a professional-looking printout of our schematic. Next week, we'll look at Express PCB and how these two programs tie together. That really was easy to use, much easier than any of the other CAD programs I've tried. EagleCAD is a nice one, and the link may have been wrong on that. It's, it's cadsoftusa.com for that. And it's much more comprehensive, but it's really hard to beat this Express PCB and the Express Schematic that we looked at this week. They're both free. That company manufactures PC boards, but you can print out your own stuff, so you don't have to use their services if you don't want to.
Wow. Good stuff, as always. I need to get more involved in that. So, can I come down and take lessons from you on how to do that?
You sure can. We'll even warm up the soldering iron for you.
Okay. Well, we're going to go out and see what's happening in Colorado. We're running long here, but let's see what Amanda's got. Amanda, how are you tonight, and what kind of tales do we have from our amateur radio friends?
Well, good evening, everybody. I'm doing great. Do I sound okay?
Oh, yeah.
Good.
Okay,
sound
perfect.
Great. You look great.
I wanted to make sure. Oh, thanks, Gordo.
Oh, you're
yeah,
welcome.
I didn't get a sound check or anything, so, you know, I always get paranoid. All right, you guys, here it is. You know, with gardening time coming up, watering your grass, stuff like that, this wonderful ham, he calls it the death and resurrection of the HW16, but I call it beware what responsibilities you give a six-year-old, okay? So, after being licensed in 1995, a friend got me interested in HF and also sold me my first HF rig, a Heathkit HW16, 50-watt, 3-band CW rig. I am assuming that this was his pride and joy. He set up a shack in his basement with a window directly above the radio table to accommodate for the antenna wire feeding through. One day, he turned on the rig and it came to life with lots of dits and dahs. And since it was late, he decided he'd shut it off and wait until the next day to start making his first contacts. All right. So he got home from work very, very excited to make his first contacts. And he turned on the rig and heard nothing but a loud 60-cycle hum. Then he noticed that his table was a little bit damp, wet in places. And then he noticed the inside of the rig was very, very wet. And he unplugged it with a pair of insulated pliers and stared at the rig, kind of scratching his head, you know, wondering what was going on. He was very upset, very depressed. And he was pretty sure that his HF days were now numbered. Although he went upstairs to go to dinner, and that night his son, Alex, who was just 6 at the time, said, "Daddy, I watered all the flowers next to the house just like you asked." So he felt so bad. He didn't want to tell his son that after what he had told him to do for his chores for the day that he actually ruined Daddy's rig. He went through everything he could possible to fix this thing. And he contacted his Elmer, who got him into the hobby and everything, and asked him if there was anything he could do for the rig. And Elmer said, "Yes, yes, take top and bottom off, blow dry it out a lot of times, do it over and over and over again." So the guy was, "Okay, I'll do that." And next he had... Needless to say, he forgot that he didn't have a speaker in the rig. So he remembered that, and voila, rig works just fine. So after thinking about it, now the rig needs its second resurrection because he has not used it for a long time. But we wish him very good luck in that. And that is November 3, Romeo Oscar Charlie. Thank you so much for sharing that story. And since Bob and Gordo have been talking about clubs and they want to hear more about clubs and everything else, so I want to hear that in Ham Tales as well. So you guys, please send me all of your club stories. Anything that you have done, have you brought a club back from the dead, anything like that, we would love to hear about it. So send that to hamtails@live.com. And that is hamtails@live.com. So there you go, you guys. Thanks so much.
That is great. Thanks, Amanda. Great
ham
tales. All right, Bob, over to you.
Well, it's been a great night, and we appreciate everybody being here. Amanda, that was great. Cheryl's watching over the chat room, and she's already fired up on 3850. It looks like 7268's good. By the way, somebody asked, what am I using here? This is a Pro 2. I love that Pro 2. I've had it a long time. And Collins 30L1 amplifier. That's all I really have here. I got one of my little powered speakers that I built years ago, but we got more stuff to come. But remember, our main home is back in Illinois, and so we got to keep that all going too. But I really love this and all the many, many antennas I now have, so we're having fun. Thanks very much for being here. George, we'll see you in Las Vegas in about a week. Is that right?
That's right, Bob. We'll look forward to seeing everyone else who can get off work that day. Around 4 p.m. Pacific time, I believe, is when Ham Nation will stream live from the NAB studios there. That Twit is going to be broadcasting from that week.
Yeah, looking forward to that. And Julian will be there, and we're just going to have a big time. So we'll look for you on Ham Nation here next week early in the afternoon and see you live streamed from the Hilton on Wednesday night, 6 o'clock West Coast time. So 7-3, everybody. I'm going to go out and start pulling some more wire. Yeah, I know it's dark, but got to get it done. I appreciate everybody in Petaluma taking care of us. And we'll talk to you next here on Ham Nation. Pass the word and have fun. Amateur radio is the greatest hobby in the world. 7-3 from north of Springfield and south of Pleasant Hope. Population 616. Bye-bye for now. This is K9EID.